Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. And get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills and online at duffysbeer.com.
You already know that Invisible Fence brand creates happier homes where pets can safely play in the yard out of danger. But did you know we also have products to help your pets avoid bad behaviors with trash cans, furniture, and unsafe areas both inside and out? We even offer a programmable pet door for more pet freedom. And expert installation plus professional pet training guarantee success. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
Good morning!
Crib Live Radio presents the Morning Sports Report.
And this is my wake-up show. I'll be coming at you every morning. About this time, hoping to make your experience the best available in this price range.
An update and preview of everything going on in Pittsburgh sports. Now the Morning Sports Report. Trib Total Media. See what's next. Good morning.
Junker, Laird, and Benz brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand and Duffy's Beer. Quite simply, one of the most frustrating regular season losses in Pittsburgh Steelers history last night, guys. And
Junker
of all the
Benz
plays,
correct in picking pork, Laird and listeners wrong.
Oh yeah, you were right on the money. That was a no-brainer. Bigger than any of the plays we're going to be talking about here in the next hour, well, 3 hours. The Hall of Fame game, where Sean Swisham went out on a ridiculous tackle attempt in a meaningless preseason game, let alone a regular season game, which cost him their kicker, which led to a trickle-down effect of Scobie, correct?
And they were one of the few teams without a second kicker in training camp, and he shouldn't even have been in the game at that point, and it's just another personnel mistake.
Ken, be patient. This guy's going to find his stride.
Well, Mark Cabali's tweeting this morning about he's making a lot of money, and he might not be going anywhere right now, so, Tim, you might need to be right on that front from Steelers fans' points of view.
Can you imagine paying a fourth kicker in a capped sport like the National Football League? You might have to pay a fourth kicker to get rid of this guy.
Mm. Wow. Jeff Reed available for cheap?
Jeff Reed was on Brand X today, openly begging to come back.
I'm sure there would be some fans that would take him back, or at least for a trial with open arms right now.
Well, I was listening to that, and as Josh Miller said, and this is so true, that if he had been here for 5 years and won some games for you and been a good kicker, you go through a rough period, you put up with it, it's a slump. The guy has no cash with the team, none. He hasn't done anything. They've lost two games. He missed two field goals in both games. They lost those two games by a total of 10 points. And a 49-yarder on a cool night with the wind a little bit tricky. I know today people think 49-yarders are automatic. It's the second one that you got to kick.
Yeah, 40 yards, and he's missed an extra point already. He'd already missed two in the New England game. So he had a wonky history. The one at the end of the half was partially blocked. Is that correct? The 36-yarder that barely made it through? So I guess you can't really hold him accountable for that or say he's shaky.
Well, you can hold him accountable for kicking it too low. 36-yarder, you shouldn't have to line. You should be able to pop it up.
I think it was tipped or deflected is what I'm saying. I think so.
Yeah, but that the trajectory of the kick or that could still be his fault.
Maybe. Anyway, of all the plays, that 40-yard field goal and the play preceding it is the one that I have the most difficulty accepting the whole mindset of Tomlin and Haley on. It was really a fascinating game for a lot of angles. I know we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the overtime, but
you know what game it reminded me of was that, because everybody keeps tweeting me, and we got a ton of phone calls about this last night on the post-game show until 2:35 in the morning, just by the way.
That's why your voice sounds so deep and sexy today.
A lot of people were saying this is the most frustrating loss in the Tomlin era. This is, or at least the worst regular season loss in the Tomlin era. I can't go that far because it's the backup quarterback. I think more, and this is the one it reminds me of, that 13-10 loss against the Bengals with the division in the balance 2 years ago, where they were flip-flopping at the end of the game with the missed field goals, because for as good as Justin Tucker is, he made that 52-yarder look like nothing, by the way, last night at the end, after you saw Scobie struggle with all the kicks, but they laid up for a 52-yarder at Heinz Field, laid up for it. You know, that I was looking at Harbaugh, like, I know he's a good kicker, but that's not easy. And I felt like it was going to be that routine again, just like it was in overtime, possession for possession, possession for possession. And it was very similar, a very similar feeling to what I thought was one of the worst losses in the Tomlin era in a regular season, which was that Cincy game here that, in essence, cost them a division, in a weak division that year that they could have had, despite their own faults.
Yeah, well, Tucker's the best kicker in the league, right? I mean, if he's not number one, he's top three or four.
I think, Guy, you said it going into the game, right? You said it going into the game that this might be the difference on a narrow spread when we're doing our pick and pork thing, that on a toss-up game like this, who do you want to go with, Justin Tucker or Josh Scobie? And that's what it came down to, and there you have it.
Yep, and that's the reason I have the biggest problem now. The Steelers are up here by 3 points. They need to get one first down to end the game, okay? It's third and four. I know you need to run clock, but you know if you settle for Scobie at a 40-yard field goal, there's a really good chance he's going to miss that based on his body of work. And if he misses it, because Tucker's so good, there's a really good chance you're going to overtime. So why do you run Le'Veon Bell into the line of scrimmage and not give Vic a little rollout and a little chance to go for something to get the first down? They played to lose there, and I thought that was the biggest play of the game.
I thought they were too conservative the whole night. As the game went on, they let Vic do a little bit more. I tweeted early on, you know, you got to let this guy run a little bit if I know they're afraid of him getting hurt, but to quote the coach, you can't live in your fears. The guy's got to be able to play.
Yeah, that was very counter of a game plan to that credo from Mike Tomlin, was
right.
It not? I'm with you. I thought the first two, maybe three drives, it looked like they were trying to coach a high school kid. And I'm no fan of Vic personally, but I still stand by what I said when they signed him, which is he was the best quarterback available at the time, and they didn't let him play like they had gotten him. You know, everything off the field that they had to put up with for a couple weeks before he actually got to the regular season, they got through the preseason, all the protests and all that, everything they had to put up with was allegedly worth it because they got themselves the best backup quarterback on the market. So let him do what he does best. Or at least don't coach him like he's a watered-down version of Landry Jones, which is what they did. And on the first pass, I thought, well, maybe they're onto something here. When he missed Heath Miller and almost threw an interception on a ball that only needed to travel, 6 feet in the air?
Yeah,
I thought, oh, my God, what are we going to look at here for the next 6 weeks while Roethlisberger is out? But when they let the reins get loose a little bit towards the end of the first quarter and into the second quarter, he was pretty good. You know, he moved the team. He rolled out, bootleg, waggle. Brown let him down on the deep ball after the turnover. That would have been a touchdown pass.
That, you know, and then I go back to, you know, having at least built up a resume with the team. You know, not enough people are talking about that because they got nothing out of that, even though I thought the Cockrell interception really changed the momentum of what would have been a poor start. They got no points out of it. And there's 6 points right there. So if you want to bitch about the 6 points Scobie left out there, bitch about the 6 points AB left out there.
One area where they're predictable, yet I don't
at least now we don't have to listen to the stupid announcement. This is the 36th game in a row.
Oh, my God.
Antonio Brown has caught 5 passes for fit because he didn't do it. The streak is over.
I thought
he got 5 passes. They'll switch that stat now.
I thought Tunch was going to light a candle when that streak ended last night on the broadcast. I mean, he was openly, actively rooting for it. Because we were down at Stage AE by that point. I was listening to the game broadcast, and you would have thought he lost a family member when he realized that that was unable to be continued. I mean, that was, for crying out loud, it's just a stupid little statistical streak. Who cares?
But, Guy, you're right about the live in your fears stuff with Vic, but doesn't that make it all the more bizarre that they would then fall in love with him in overtime to put the game on his legs on the 4th and 2? I mean, I don't mind the overtime calls, really. I mean, I'll defend them for these, and we'll get into them.
Oh, I do. I don't mind the run. Okay.
They didn't trust him in the first half, and then they're a whole game on him in the
overtime. Well, to be fair there, Ken, I think, you know, early on they were a little nervous. They wanted to see what was the – and I think he built up some trust as the game went on. And as they took the leash off him a little bit, he produced, and I think they felt more comfortable there. I don't mind him running the ball, trying to get that – that – the pass to Brown on 4th and 1. Le'Veon Bell's the first back in 30 games that can get 100 yards on him. He doesn't touch it either time on 4th down plays in overtime. I'm sorry. You can complain all you want about Josh Scobie today. I give that coaching staff an F- for last night.
The two worst throws of the game for Michael Vick were his first throw and his last throw. I mean, even if he underthrows him, he's got position at least. He turns around, and then he gets his 5th catch. Or that would have been 50 yards? It would have been 50 yards, right? He would have gotten 8 on that.
Yes, it would have been. That's
right.
True.
So then we could have continued the great streak. But even if he underthrows him, instead of overthrowing him, way overthrowing him, they would have been okay because you could have come back and just fallen towards the ball.
As Baltimore got back in the game, down by six, then down by three, what I thought would happen, I thought we'd have the typical Vic turnover that would lead to the game-winning score. That's how I thought it was. Just as I watched it, I thought, you know, he's played conservative. He's done what they wanted him to do, not lose the game, done enough to have them win the game, and I could just see it. And in the end, you know, I mean, Flacco's the one that turned it over twice.
That's what makes it all the more frustrating, isn't it, Guy? Because your defense came up with plays. After the Vic fourth and two failed run, your defense came up with a stop. Mike Mitchell's making plays at the sidelines, and you still lose.
The defense stopped them three times in the second half on fourth down. Well, they stopped themselves once with the stupid fake field goal, which I'm sure he was thinking about when they were, you know, losing by three late in the game. I didn't like that call either on their behalf, but. Yeah, I mean, but I don't want to hear, though, either that, you know, Vic played well enough to win the game. I've heard that 9,000 times on Tim's show last night, coming in today. Technically, he did, but they didn't even have 100 yards passing going into the overtime. You're not going to win many games like that. There's got to be more to it than that.
You can look at it any number of ways and say that X, Y, and Z did enough to win the game because the field goal kicker let you down, but that doesn't absolve their approach to how they – incorporated Vic into the offense.
I thought the Baltimore's first touchdown was so cheap, Tim. That was in one drive. That was the worst tackling I've ever seen in a 5-minute span.
The one that started with the four-set 33-yarder.
Yeah, and the rest of the game. I mean, I didn't think they played bad defensively, but that tackling was awful on every play. Moats on the touchdown. I mean, oh my goodness.
Yeah, that was bad. Moats on the touchdown was bad, and the defense collectively I thought was poor. Individually, you can look at a number of different guys and say they had good games. Like, I thought Spence did a lot of good things. I thought that Tuitt and Hayward made a number of big plays. Yep. But on the collective, everybody
missed at least Ross Cockrell.
Yeah, Ross Cockrell did a lot of good things, but he got beat on a touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, you could look at the group and say they were terrible because they left 150 yards without being all that, I don't know, staunch in trying to tackle Justin Forsett. The overall defense, to me, was not good, but individually, they all did something that was positive.
Yeah, it's one of those games as a fan, I'm sure you turn off, and it's not one where you say, I'm not watching these bums again, they stink. You're frustrated at certain people, probably the coaches, you know, as you say, more the collective team effort than this team has no chance to win, because they did have a chance. They should have been 3-1 after last night's game, and sitting in pretty good position, and you know, with Ben walking around without crutches before the game, maybe that's one of the bigger developments. You know, if you're 3-1 and Ben's back in 2 weeks, you know, that's huge. Now, we still don't know about Roethlisberger's health, of course, officially, but that seemed to be good news, right?
Yes, everybody was an orthopedic surgeon from Section 502 last night. Oh, I see Ben's walking with only a slight degree of a limp here. I diagnosed this as 2 more weeks and he'll be back.
Okay, well, let's talk about the three big decisions, the decision-making or lack thereof. Do you guys not agree with me in the regulation one? 3rd and 4, Le'Veon Bell straight ahead. Just settle for the 40-yard field goal and put the game on Scobie's leg to make it a 6-point game with 1:01 to go.
That proves, I just don't like it. You know what that proves to me more than anything else, Ken, is the whole next man up theory is bunk. You know, if it's Ben Roethlisberger, they throw the ball there. Next man up, throw the ball there. You're the next man up with Michael Vick, let him throw the ball there. You know, if Michael Vick's even with the Jets last year, if this is Michael Vick when he's with the Eagles, they probably have him throw there. And they're just spooked because he's a backup quarterback. He's not Ben.
Yeah, and I can understand, like, you feel like if you don't want him to take a sack there because it'll knock you out of field goal range, it is a delicate thing, you know, and Vick had already taken a bad sack earlier.
Two. I would say both of those were on him holding the football too long. Zadarius, whatever his name is.
But I just had no faith in Scobie there. Why would Tomlin? Why would you have had faith in Scobie to kick a 40-yard field goal there? That's 50-50 at best.
And then you get into the overtime, and the first one would have been a 56-yarder, I think. I mean, you're not going to try that with anybody. But the second one was a 50-yarder, which is shorter than what the game winner is, and I think you would try it. And that's my point, and maybe it is strictly financial. But how do you go forward with a guy? And I'll tell you this, I heard disparaging remarks made about him in the tunnel coming up the steps by Steeler players with him in full listening.
Earshot.
Earshot, yeah. He was able
to. Is that right?
Yes.
Well, that's pretty alarming. I mean,
if you just make one of them. that was the comment.
Yeah.
With some other words in there.
Yeah, that's a big decision
for Tomlin.
Gosh darn. Can we really go forward with this guy? Right.
No, I don't think so.
If you can't trust them.
I don't think so.
Otherwise, the Laird plan is in full effect. I mean, you don't kick anything over 35 yards the rest of the season.
Hey, it was pretty early, if I'm not mistaken, in Schwiesham's tenor that he missed two in one game and they lost. I think it was against Oakland, and you're wondering. But then he went on this long string. But this is two losses, two missed field goals in both of them. You're used to seeing maybe three missed field goals a year around
here.
Yeah,
if I remember right.
He's missed four in a month.
That was early in his second year because he came in mid-year,
mid-year
the year before. So it was starting his first full year, and he was shaky against Oakland, and he missed another one too. With Vic, you know, we were talking about how he threw, and we'll get to more of the decisions in a second, Ken. But did you notice his yards per pass was 4.8? His yards per rush, 3.7. There's about a yard difference between his average completion and his average run.
Well, he threw a couple conservative passes that also were called into question. Now, in overtime, it's 3rd and 2 at the 39. And a lot of people have said, if you know you're going to go for it on 4th, why do you run this play? And I think that is a point to be made.
Right.
But they threw for Antonio Brown, and it's hard for me to have a problem with that. If you're trying to throw the ball to your best player, it makes some sense. What'd you think of that 3rd and 2 pass where Davis, the DB, broke it up right before they ran?
You got two plays to gain 2 yards. I'm running both times.
You'd run Le'Veon there?
Yep.
The thing with me there, though, guy, is you're without your starting center.
Go back to the sequence for again, Ken. Which one are we talking about? Which overtime sequence?
First series of overtime. So Le'Veon rips off that beautiful run, that 21-yarder.
Yeah.
It's 3rd and 2, and they throw the slant to Antonio Brown over the middle at the 39-yard line, at Baltimore's 39. And it was broken up, which led to the 4th and 2, and they took the timeout, and that's when they came out with Vic.
Yeah, but see, that's it right there. They didn't. That's why I was confused. They weren't convinced they were going to go for it on 4th down. They had to call the timeout to talk themselves into it. They started sitting Barry on the field, right?
Yeah, they could have punted. That's right.
So that's
maybe
actually
they should have punted. Maybe, yeah.
That's why they called the timeout. They weren't sure themselves. And I made this point in the postgame show. The coaching staff was like everybody else at Heinz Field last night. They were still trying to figure out what they were going to do. Whether it was the national broadcasters, the local broadcasters, or a guy in one of the luxury suites, it didn't matter. You know, everybody, the coaches themselves, had no idea what they were going to do in that situation. Because they sent the punt team out, then brought them back off, called the timeout, and they had to talk about it. So, to your point, I don't think the sequencing was in their head. Because they weren't sure what they were going to do.
Yeah, which is a fault of theirs. But guy, like, you know, Brandon Williams is good, as you pointed out, their nose tackle. It's tough to run up the middle against them. I don't mind Le'Veon Bell being the guy that gets the ball, but I don't think you can just pound it straight ahead.
Well, I don't mind anybody getting them. I don't care what you do there. When you have two plays to get 2 yards, I don't care, Brandon Williams or no Brandon Williams, Ken, you got to be able to get that in 2 runs.
Ken, at one point.
But on 3rd and 2, maybe. By the time it's 4th and 2, I'm not just running Le'Veon. Like, I think they have to do something tricky there, and I don't mind the Vic run.
It just ripped off a 22-yard run 2 plays earlier. I mean, they had some running success against them. I'm just not throwing there. I didn't see enough out of him throwing the ball that I'm – and you talk about that run. I mean, three different times last night they came close to break. That was a shoestring tackle. What was the guy's name in Indy that Ben tackled?
Nick Harper.
I mean, he almost broke that. Antonio almost broke the punt return. I thought for sure Cockrell was gone on the interception. How he let a 6'6", 300-pound guy, the only guy he had to beat, tackle him at midfield is beyond me. But
Ken, on 3rd and 4th down on the 2 possessions in overtime, they didn't hand the ball to Le'Veon Bell once. It was
They did give it to him on the 3rd and 2.
They threw
it to him. Yeah.
But that's Marshawn Lynch-esque, in my opinion. You don't give it to Le'Veon Bell once on a handoff on either 3rd down or fourth down, and the 2nd time in particular. I mean, this goes to what I think you were trying to say before. If you have your mind made up already that you're going to avoid your kicker, then that not only affects your approach to the drive itself, but also the sequencing when you're going to go for it on 4th down.
I agree with you there.
Okay, so like what you were saying on the first one, when they decided to throw the ball to Antonio Brown, they weren't convinced in their own head as to what they were going to do yet.
That's a good point. But by the time it's 4th and 2, would you have run Le'Veon in a traditional way, just straight up the gut after the timeout, and you're thinking about it a little bit?
How is that any more or less risky than Michael Vick running around left end?
It's just predictable, you know, and you don't have Pouncey, you know, and you got Cody Wallace, and you're going to try to run it. I'd rather punt than do that. If you're going to go for it, go for it. So I give him credit for the Vic try. It just didn't work. On the 2nd time around, Antonio Brown was open. I mean, Vic just didn't make the throw. I guess you can criticize the length of it and having him throw across the hash mark, I wonder if that was one of those left-handed, right-handed quarterback mistakes. You know, where, because you got a guy throwing all the way over his body. That's a long throw to make to Antonio Brown on the second, fourth, and one.
Oh, you mean like one of those they had to erase on the whiteboard that Haley was talking about during the week?
Right.
Maybe.
2 for 13 on third down, 0 for 2 on fourth down. That's 2 for 15 on crucial plays. You got to get off the field.
I would actually have to go back and look at that because remember what he said was the indicator is that they always want the three wide, the three guys to the wide side of the field. So I want to look at that formation and see if that's the case now, Ken. Now you got me thinking about it. I have to go back and look at the condensed or something. Maybe it was.
I don't understand why Heath Miller wasn't more of the offense. It's not
I mean,
Vic even said that.
He was only targeted twice.
I know.
You know.
Well, you guys are in agreement, though. You would not have kicked Scobie there from 50 yards to try to win the game.
Not after missing those first two.
No, after missing the first two, I don't have a problem at all with them avoiding him. What I have a problem with, though, is the fact that they didn't know that going in. Like, they hadn't made up their minds. They were being wishy-washy. They weren't sure.
That's a good point. I think that is a good point. Or maybe they just expected to convert on that third and two, but that's not a way a coach can think.
It's less about avoiding Scobie to me, and it's more about what plays did you call and what plays did you send in to be executed on third and fourth down in both situations in overtime.
Yeah, and as you said earlier, Tim, because it's the backup quarterback, there is an element to this where the playbook probably had 50 plays going in, according to the one writer. Well, you probably used them all by overtime, so it's not an easy situation for Haley to be in. I do think there is some excuse-making there in terms of we don't have many plays to draw from yet. Vic had one practice this week. So I hate to crush him on that, but in terms of the approach, you are right. They should have had two plays ready to go, knowing you're going to go for it there if that's what you're going to do, and they didn't do that.
Well, I'm not going to I'll reserve judgment until I see a game with a full now week and a half of practice. That was kind of baptism by fire there. And the sad thing is, Tim said, there's so many elements of the game that played well enough to win. But you have to, when your most important player is out, everybody's got to step up a notch. Stepping up a notch is not missing the tackles that they missed on defense, allowing a guy like Forsett to run for 11 yards, three plays in a row, or whatever it was. You can't, if you have an opportunity to break one long, you have to do it. You know, they didn't turn the ball over. I mean, that's a huge positive, especially with Vic having a penchant for doing that. You know, and when you have a chance to kick field goals that are very makeable, you have to make them. And the thing about it, if you're looking big picture right now, they're 0-2 in the conference. They're 2-0 against the NFC.
NFC, yeah, I brought that up last night.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't help you out that much.
And you've got the tough games of the without Ben streak coming up. You've got the Kansas City game, you've got the Arizona game, you've got the Cincinnati game and San Diego all in there. So this was perhaps the most winnable of the games they were going to play without Roethlisberger, and it was there to be won, and they didn't do it.
Even on paper before the game, it looked like the most winnable, and it certainly was as you're up 20-7 in the second half. And the Ravens literally were done if the Steelers beat them last night. There's only been one team since the merger that's come back from 0-4 to make the playoffs. One.
Yeah, you gave them some life.
Years. Yeah,
you gave them some big life.
Yep.
The 20-7 lead, by the way, the Steelers had 7 offensive possessions after that and came up with 0 points and lose 23-20. So
it wasn't exactly Art Rooney, the Chief, going down in the elevator during the Immaculate Reception, but after Spence and Harrison combined on that sack of Flacco, that's when Adam Crowley and I went downstairs and left and went to Stage AE. And we were walking, you know, you got to go out from the press box and walk between the river and the stadium. So we're walking behind the open end of the stadium, and neither of us, my iPod had died, and you can't stream the games, right? You can't stream the games on iHeart. So neither of us had our headset. And I said to Adam, why are they playing the defense music here? Because you could hear the defense music. And he goes, I don't know. And that's when we started to practically run to Stage AE. And then we got in, and the bartenders, they're closing the place up, and they're screaming at the television. I'm relying on the bartenders to get me caught up. He missed another field goal! You missed another field goal! They're just screaming at Scobie. And that's when we had to go back and look at the play-by-play sheet, and we tried to get caught up ourselves. I couldn't believe how that game melted down. But
And the two misses are like literally a minute, 30 seconds apart.
Right.
I mean, you know, they even after the first miss, the defense goes out and shoves it up there. All right, you know, We did it again. Let's go. And he misses an even closer one.
Which, by the way, how does Flacco take that sack between those two misses?
Yep, I was just about to say that. For everything that Flacco did last night to make it feel like yet another time Flacco beats the Steelers at Heinz Field,
right.
It was also Flacco does it again against the Steeler defense like we had seen 1,000 times before, throwing interceptions, putting the ball on the ground, taking sacks. You know, we've seen this movie before with Joe Flacco in both directions, positively and negatively.
He goes Flacco to Flacco in like a flip of a switch. It's unbelievable.
If you would have told me yesterday when we ended the show that he would be sacked 5 times, would lose a fumble and an interception, and you would knock Steve Smith out of the game, I'm like, man, that's a win. Yeah, what more can you ask him to do? Stopping 3 times on 4th down in the second half? What more can you ask him to do?
Talking about
stuff. And then he's hitting 17-yard passes to Darren Waller, the first catch of his career for the win at game-time field goal.
The pus he was working with as far as teammates went last night. No Steve Smith, no Todd Heap, no Ray Rice, I mean, no Torrey Smith, all these other guys that you're used to seeing him use for these drives down the field. Not even a TJ Houshmandzadeh at the latter stages of his career to be found. Darren Waller. And Boyle, was that his name? The other tight end that's not
right.
Max Williams that he was relying on?
The fake punt guy.
Right, he's taking these guys that are just nobodies. There wasn't a guy aside from Forsett on that football team that I would want on my fantasy team. And he's taking them down against the Steeler defense again at Heinz Field and putting them in a position where they could win eventually in overtime. So that's the good Flacco that Steeler fans have come to unfortunately know. When, what was the number again, Guy, on these field goal teams or field goal results that the Steelers have had against the Ravens?
I could be off one or two because I didn't have my media guide with me, but I think it was the 16th time in 43 games between the two it's been decided by exactly 3. And there's some in there that are decided by 2 or 1. I'm just talking about exactly decided by the 3 points.
And it was 13 times since 2008, the year that they played each other 3 times and the Steelers went on and went to the Super Bowl and won it when they beat the Ravens in the AFC Championship. 13 times since 2008, the rivalry has been settled by a touchdown or less. And that's not even counting the 9-point win that they got in that tight game in the second playoff round in 2010. 13 times by a touchdown or less.
They never let you down, and yet they always let you down.
Ugh.
Pittsburgh and Baltimore, especially on a short week. It's the Morning Sports Report, commercial-free, as always, in the 10 a.m. hour, brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand. Thanks to Invisible Fence Brand at InvisibleFence.com. Schedule a free in-home consultation. They are creating happier homes where pets can safely play in the yard and out of danger, and also products that help your pets avoid bad behavior inside the house. They've got a SCOBY door, I think, now today. A SCOBY programmable pet door for more pet freedom. Also brought to you by Duffy's Beer, Pleasant Hills on Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER, duffysbeer.com, and Pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers. Get them before they're gone.
I think there's an invisible fence between the uprights.
We got a ton of emails here. Let's wade through some. We ready?
Sure.
Jeff in Columbus starts us off. As we all know, Bill Cowher's teams were a remarkable 108-1-1 in games where they led by at least 11 points. Perhaps the standard is the standard. Mike Tomlin should have given Bill, who was in attendance last night, the headsets in the second half, watched and learned.
It's funny how that goalpost kept moving for Cowher, too. Did you notice that? That stat used to be, it was 108-1-1 or whatever it was after 10 points. Then it was after 10 points in the second half. Now it's 11 points. But however you want to take that stat and massage it to make this loss look bad by comparison, that's fine by me today because that was a bad loss.
We had a Jag Off of the Week vote for Scobie at 1:19 a.m., by the way. Just looking back to the email. Thanks to Sean for that one.
I think that's unavoidable this week, don't you?
Things can change by Wednesday, but, yeah, it's hard to...
When the Pirates blow home field advantage in a wild card race, we might have somebody else in there.
Brian in Roanoke, Virginia. If the Steelers lose in Baltimore later in the year, Ravens will have beaten the Steelers 4 of the last 5 games. Needless to say, I only care about that game the rest of the year. So frustrated. They were the better team, but the Ravens were more clutch. Cut Scobie.
They really, no matter what else they faced down the road, and I think they would have faded anyway compared to, they win that game, and it, even on October 1st, is a two-team race in the AFC North. It's the Steelers and Bengals, and that's it. Well, the Browns aren't doing anything, and at 0-4, they're not coming back. They're dead and buried. You know, and the only team you got to worry about now is the Bengals. You play them twice, maybe even have Roethlisberger for both games. So that's how huge that is. You know, Tomlin said after the game, this isn't going to define our season. You may look back at it, and it could.
What do you think of the Ravens? Will they win 8 games this year based on what we saw last night?
Ken, they lost 3 games by 14 points going in, which is why I could not pick the Steelers last night, only getting 2.5 points. I mean, they had not finished, and they talked about, you know, they had leads in 2 of those games late and blew it. So I think they're better than their 1-3 record shows. And a win like that, when you're down 13 in the second half on the road to your arch rival and you come back, that's galvanizing.
The biggest problem with those guys, which is part of the problem that I have with how the Steelers approached the game, was they didn't put enough pressure on their single weakest attribute, which is their secondary.
Yeah, I agree.
And probably couldn't space, or thought they couldn't early, right? They didn't want to make Vic make mistakes early in the game. Ravens have the Browns at home next week, then at San Francisco, so they very well could be 3-3.
Yep.
But would you agree with my premise there that, you know, they patted themselves on the back even and stood tall in the light of criticism about bringing in Michael Vick for purely football reasons, and then they had to use him, which they probably should have known that they would have needed to do because they got so lucky with their starting quarterback the last 2 years. So they have this guy, and then they treat him like he was, I don't know, a wing T high school quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, I was, by the end of the first drive, I was expecting them to come out the next drive and run the veer. You know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Tweet from Action Jackson, I think this is an important point, too. Not only the Scobie's misses, but poor coaching because he's kicking into the wind. Those were into the wind at Heinz Field into the open end. Therefore, you've got to be more aggressive, in my opinion, on the 3rd and 4 before you try it for the second time when he's already missed one. As a coach, you've got to take those things into consideration.
I agree with that, and I don't even have to add the wind part. I think you got to be more aggressive there anyway. Yeah. I will say this last night. Did you get out on the field, Tim, for the end of the game?
No, I
think the stadium being closed, and you can talk about it being a tricky place to kick, and he talked about how he tried to play the wind on the one that he kicked and the ones that he missed. Those flags on top of the goalpost were limp for a lot of the night. I don't think there's nearly the wind. And I used to look around because the kickers would talk about what a tough place it is to kick, and you would see the flags on the upper part of the stadium above the stands blowing completely to the north, and you'd see the ones on the goalpost blowing completely to the south. Not that you're going to kick the ball as high as the top of the stadium on a field goal try anyway, but it gave you an idea how they swirled and how crazy it was. And I've been looking at that a couple times now in the first few games in the preseason this year, and I don't see it as much. And Scobie was asked that afterwards, from when you were here before, does the end being closed in more matter? And he says, I didn't kick here enough to really make a study of that. So he wasn't going to.
But he did go into that long-winded diatribe about how many people he talked to, Sweezum and Reed. And Reed confirmed this today, that he had spoken to Scobie before he started kicking here. So he was doing his research. He was aware of the wind for sure. I'm with your point on what those new stands do, though, Guy, because I can't tell from a wind point of view, but certainly from a sound point of view. I think I told you in the San Francisco game, it kept the sound in more.
Yeah.
So if it's keeping the sound in more, one would tend to believe it's keeping the wind out more, too.
I like the look, period. I think it looks better. It just doesn't look like two gigantic sideline sets of stands with an empty end.
Do we want to hear from Scobie? Josh Taylor got him last night. A little soundbite here anyway.
Sure.
45 seconds.
Hey, I give him credit. He was, you know, everybody was slinking on over there, and at least he faced the music. I'll give him that.
There's a little bit of Scobie after the game.
I feel like I let the team down. Not something that I ever want to remember doing. And, you know, it's a bad feeling. It was a hard-fought game on both sides, and I wish I'd been able to come first, but this wasn't my night.
What happened? Did you play the wind too much there?
Yeah, a little bit. The first kick I had that direction, I played the wind just inside the upright and stayed there. And then the last two, played them down the middle, and they both moved. So, you know, it's a tough end to kick because of a little more open area, but something that takes experience.
That's a tough spot because, as Jeff Reed would also tell you, and I think Sean Sweezum is acutely aware of this whenever he speaks to the media, you want to give an answer because you don't want to come off looking like a dink.
Yep.
And when Sweezum has a bad game, for as much as I like the guy, sometimes he does come off looking like a dink. because he gets Mike Tomlin esque in his short answers. But then you give an answer like that, and it's Scobie makes excuses because of wind. You know, you can't win. You either say nothing and be a jerk, or you give an explanation, and the explanation is interpreted as an excuse. So I'm not going to pin the excuse making on him. I'll just say he can't kick. He's no good. I'm sorry. I thought he was going to be a good kicker.
I mean, you could make excuses about Heinz Field is tough and he's got to adjust here and, you know, it was bad weather in New England, but he missed six kicks last year. So to me, this is a 2-year body of work.
The three were over 50.
Yeah, I guess. It's still too many. That's too many missed kicks.
Mm.
You got to bring somebody else in. You cannot go forward with Scobie another week. Do you think they will? I mean,
I don't know who.
Would you give him another try in San Diego?
Sam Ficken still out there, the Penn State kid?
Maybe.
I mean, that's the question. Who do you replace him with, though? I thought he was the best of. You know, I thought Garrett Hartley was a questionable guy when they brought him in. I didn't know much about him, and his numbers seemed to have declined in recent years. When they got this guy, I thought marked the end of Sean Sweesum. I thought he's their kicker for the next 2 or 3 years.
Was Todd Peterson, I got to look back and see this. Todd Peterson, was he signed in the offseason? Did they acquire him after they let somebody else go? I mean, how many times have they done this?
Jacksonville, you mean?
Todd Peterson, when he was here before they got Jeff Reed. Because remember, they let Peterson go in the middle of the season, and they brought in Jeff Reed. And I'm trying to remember.
That was Cowher. I mean, Cowher had no patience for these guys, right? If Cowher were coaching, Scobie would have been cut already.
Maybe, but I'm just saying, my argument being, are they going to pay a fourth kicker? That's all.
That's true.
And I'm wondering if in the past they at least paid three. Because
they got to be thanking God he didn't take their 2-year contract offer, right?
Right.
They wanted him to sign for multi-years.
Then what would they have done, right?
I guess they could have just cut him. I don't know how that works. You know, they may have, was for not guaranteed. Email from Sean. You can email us, sportstalk@tribweb.com. So many things to talk about, guys, including I thought they should have gone for a touchdown at the end of the first half.
Oh, yeah, let's get to that because we're going to second-guess play calling. That's one that ticks me off as much as the approach that you've got in the Le'Veon Bell play, Ken. You know, the second quarter thing, to me, why not take one shot at the end zone, right? Instead of call the timeout, put the kicker out there,
right,
kick the field goal, and leave Baltimore with at least the opportunity to run back the kick. Why not take a shot at the end zone there?
I don't like the heart. Every game you can bitch about play calling if the team loses, and a lot of times even if they win, and I think it's overdone. But last night's a game that I think it's very apropos criticism.
Well, they have about 20 seconds left. They were in the red zone, first down in the red zone.
It was 13 or 15, yes.
Okay, so then they threw a little dump off to Le'Veon, and then they called the timeout. Yeah, I guess you're right. If you throw a pick in the end zone, then people are bitching. Why would you do that? You know, you blew 3 points. I didn't have a ton of problem with that one.
I don't know. They're a bad kicker. I don't know what they are.
Yeah, and he barely made it. You're right about that.
And there's time left on the clock.
Sean, anyway, says, though, I wanted to focus on the overall picture of this team and its coach, including last night, Tomlin's 9th loss when his team had a 10-point or greater lead. It's his 11th loss since 2012 to a below-500 team. Four of the five losses last season with what was the easiest schedule in the league. And he compares it also to that Cowher record of, you know, holding leads.
It is amazing how often they lose to sub-500 teams. It really is.
Baltimore, if you know, is not as bad as some of the teams they've lost to. I think we can all agree on that. And a division opponent, but it's a fair point. Bart is in Baltimore, in enemy territory. Thank you, Steelers, for making my life miserable here. Silver lining last night, did we find a real corner in Cockrell with the interception and fumble recovery? I know he got beat by Aiken, but that was a great throw. Also, where was Jarvis Jones?
Yeah, Jarvis Jones went from starting to build something to being absolutely absent. He's one guy that I can't think of a real positive play that he made.
Jeez, I can't think of his name being or noticing him one time.
You know, when I noticed him was on the final drive when I said, hey, Jarvis is in there. Where's he been all night? That's when I noticed him. The Cockrell thing, see, like a guy like Ross Cockrell scares me. I think he's similar to, you know, what they're looking at right now at Antoine Blake. He's one of these guys where you expect nothing of him. He's a body. He's a last-minute signing. Throw him into the mix, and, oh, let's see what he can do. And then he plays well, and then you expect him to be good when you put him in there as a starter. And then he gets overexposed and overextended. He played really well last night. He was good in the game before that against St. Louis. But I don't think it's, hey, we found Mel Blunt by accident. You know what I mean?
Yep. Killer Chihuahua's got a song parody today. Would you care to hear it?
Sure, I always like Killer Chihuahua getting creative.
Scooby Dooby Doo kicks like poo. You're such a disappointment. See ya, Scooby Doo. Your days are through. It's time for unemployment.
You know what? That was really a good effort. But your singing effort and your delivery is what you stole the show there, Ken.
Yeah,
thanks.
There was a little bit of little range in the voice there.
I'm going to ask you, be prepared. Don't lose that email because I'm going to ask you to do that again. So either print it out and have it at the ready, because the mark of a true craftsman is when you can do it on demand.
Oh, man.
That's when I know you've made it as a musician.
Your pastor's going to be calling you to join the church choir.
It's not as good as my Love Boat rendition from a last
year. Oh, that was terrible.
Paul emails.
Was that it from Killer Chihuahua? Because usually gives us three. I'm expecting now three song lyrics.
Come on, that was masterful.
That was a low coup.
We did have a Snoop Dogg effort last night, too. I don't know if you guys caught Snoop
Dogg. Oh, yeah. Hey, Josh just walked around the corner. I think he's trying to get the forever save your singing effort there. So, come on. Do you have the Snoop Dogg ready to go?
Now, this is not safe for work, unless we bleeped it out. I don't know if we made the efforts to put bleeps in here.
Because we're internet, so we can do this even if it's not, right?
Okay, but yeah, but I just want to put out the alert that if you're listening at work right now, you may want to turn the speakers
down. After that Elton John, Bernie Taupin effort between you and Killer Chihuahua, I'd hate for us to go off the air here. So I just want to make sure we're within bounds.
All right, here is the great Steelers fan, Snoop D-O-double-G.
The f*** out of here, Josh Scobie. We need to get rid of that motherfucker. He's sorry as f***. He was sorry in Jacksonville. He's sorry with us. Get his ass out of here. Bye-bye, bitch. Sorry, motherfucker, for you.
Who was better now, Killer Chihuahua or Snoop Dogg?
I like Killer Chihuahua.
All right.
There were no beats in the background for that. If you could figure out a way to rhyme it.
That was just malicious. Bye-bye, bleep.
What's funny, though, is that was for as vindictive as that sounded, it wasn't even bordering on Todd Haley in the preseason last year.
That's true. Now he's buddies with Todd.
Todd Haley in the preseason.
All right, Paul emails. Paul says, the game sucked last night, guys. There were some terrible play calls by Haley and Tomlin. Give it to Le'Veon Bell. It does give me some hope that they can actually do something down the road if Ben comes back and play as good as he was. They almost won against a desperate team with a good quarterback, and there's basically one full day of practice. But my 6-10 prediction isn't looking right anymore. They would have won if Ben was in. If Ben played in that game, do they win easily?
Yes. Ben played in that game?
Blow
them out. Oh, God. I don't think it would have looked like the San Francisco game.
It wouldn't have even looked like exactly.
He'd have picked that secondary apart.
It wouldn't have even been reminiscent. Like, there were a couple of occasions where I said, you know, if Ben were in here, ... Like, I'll give you an example. One area where they are predictable offensively and no one complains is when they get the ball on a turnover or they get a break or something, a nice punt return. After Cockrell's pick and they went up top and they threw it to AB, they do that all the time. Everybody knows it's coming. Everybody should know it's coming. When they get a change of possession, they're between the 40s. In this case, they're actually within. I think it was from 35 yards out. They're going to go to the end zone. And I tweeted that last night, and nobody seems to be to mind that they're predictable there because it tends to work. That situation is one where you can compare it to if Ben were here. But aside from that, the rest of the game, how can you even do it? Because they would have been up 21. You know, the offense would have just chewed up that secondary. They would have had the full playbook out there. It never would have been close.
Did Antonio Brown, like, bitch at Vic on the sideline? There was some scene of him getting up and leaving as Vic tried to sit down next to him.
I saw Hayward Bay and kind of throwing his arms up in the air and talking to him about something, but I didn't see Antonio Brown. And that doesn't mean he didn't do it, but I didn't see it.
Charlie didn't do the postgame show with me last night. It was Adam Crowley, and I'll credit him for this. Was that the most Darius Hayward Bay touchdown of Darius Hayward Bay's career? It almost snuck through him, and he had to pin the ball against his side. The back of the ball had almost squeezed all the way through him. That was such a DHB TD. It was just too bad because he was all right. You can see, this is what I was talking about with Martavis Bryant coming back. The rapport, if for lack of a better phrase, that Vic has built with the lesser wide receivers because he works with them more often. I mean, he was looking at Bay a lot last night.
Yeah.
When Martavis comes back, I think that will help them against San Diego.
Well, my point, I guess, with this is Antonio Brown going to be a problem until Ben gets back, if Vic's not throwing him the ball enough, if he's not getting his 5 and 50, if that's exactly what was going on here. Because
you
guys
should be
right.
Mad at Haley.
Well, he would have had his 5 and 50 if he holds on to the touchdown pass. I don't care.
Well, that's true.
The ball was spinning the wrong way.
Yeah.
That was
apparently
a lefty-righty thing.
Yeah, it was. Well, they actually talked about that on the telecast. Phil Sims brought that up.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, is that why Phil Sims was trending in Pittsburgh?
Oh, well, he was just in typical Sims the whole broadcast. Just
well,
totally off.
I mean, if it's enough for them to change the rotation, I'm not saying it doesn't make a difference, but I'm also saying if you're the best receiver in the NFL, you catch that ball.
The most ludicrous Sims moment was the Steelers punted, okay? And the guy, who's their return man? Campanero?
Campanero, yeah.
Whoever it was, he let it bounce at like the 17 and it rolled inside
stupid.
The 10. And Sims goes, well, the ball was moving. That's a good decision by Campanero.
The ball was
the
moving.
The ball is moving. And then he kept saying it. Like, he kept going back and like, that was a good decision by Campanero. It was a good thing he let that go. And give the Steelers 10 extra yards to pin them inside the 10.
He got the yardage back right away, that guy did, on one of those reverses or jet sweeps, right, on the very next play. First
right.
and 10, they went right to him, and he got it back. But then he got hurt on it. I think he got hurt on it.
Right. Yeah, he did. He left. And, of course, Steve Smith's injured, too. And he's blaming
Mike Mitchell
for a hit that he didn't even deliver.
Okay, thank you. I was very confused about that because, as I said, you know, there's a little gap there when I was walking to stage AE, and sometimes I might lose a little bit of the real-time action. But I saw it afterwards where he said he's on his hit list. He's on
right.
my all-time hit list. You can't put a bounty on a man's head.
McCracken.
Well, I guess Slapshot was just top of mind after Johnstown the other day, right?
Yeah.
But was he talking about the Blake hit?
Yeah.
Or was
is...
there a different hit that I didn't
no,
see?
No, same hit. He says, quote, I got speared in my back by an ex-teammate. I kind of know his character and who he is. After he hit me, he said, how do you like that?
He did walk up to him. That I saw, yes.
Yeah.
But it was Blake that hit him. It was Blake and Timmons.
Timmons hit him in the back. I watched the replay over and over. And
what was illegal about that? Nothing. What's he talking about?
Yeah, I guess not. Not really. I mean,
hey, look, I got no problem with anybody calling out Mike Mitchell for anything, but at least get the name right. At least get the guy who hit you right.
Steve Smith then said, the best thing I could do without threatening him and saying I will assault you when I see you is to say I will look forward to playing him again and he's on my hit list.
My all-time hit list.
My lifetime hit list, yeah. Then Steve Smith said, first time in my career, I feel like I'm 36. I'm trying to get through tomorrow. I'm trying to make it to the airplane safely. So that was obviously a physical game. Ravens will take the brunt of this for a little while.
But even before he got knocked out, he wasn't doing much. And
I agree.
That in
yeah.
part was due to the fact that he'd gotten injured earlier. Was it an ankle or something to look like? But the Steelers did a really nice job of limiting him. And as we pointed out before, there's no one else for Flacco to throw to on that team. There are just devoid of weapons.
Except the rookie who caught the 17-yard pass to put him in the field goal range to tie it at the end of the game.
But again, that series...
Aiken had a pretty nice game. I mean, a couple catches behind him.
Yeah, he stepped up for them.
That series, though, where, as I said before, the Spence-Harrison sack, it culminated in that. He was trying to push the ball downfield to these guys that had just no prayer of getting open. That you know, he's trying to squeeze the ball into tight windows to the fifth wide receiver on their team. Steelers tried to do that once, too, with Sammy Coates, though. What was that? That was one play call. Did that set up? What was that? That set up one of the Scobie attempts. Was that a miss?
Yeah, Wheaton got hurt, so they put Coates in. And then they threw it to him on the third down. I forget when that was, actually. Let's go back to my notes on that one. I mean, I don't mind trying Coates, but
oof.
On the third down play?
I guess Antonio Brown, that's how we all came to know him. You know, there were a couple times in the playoffs where it was like they're throwing to the guy that they drafted in the sixth round. He made two huge catches in the postseason in 2010. But that Coates play just jumped out at me like they're going to him in this situation.
Right.
I had to double-check the number.
SportsTalk at TribWeb.com. Chase says, thank you, guy, for the F-minus on the Tomlin and staff. I said that all night last night. A lot of people upset with the coaching staff last night.
Coach was right before the 49-yard miss.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah, it was the play before.
Play before the 49-yard miss. That's right. That's the Will Davis PBU on the 3rd and 5. That guy made a couple big plays for them.
Will Davis?
That corner, yeah.
Will Hill.
Number 39, whoever their depth corner was for them.
The other guy, the safety, he was fantastic.
Yeah, he had a couple big hits, no doubt.
Yeah, I think you can look at any loss and then blame the coaches and the play calling, the plays that didn't work. But there's a difference in calling a play that doesn't work or isn't executed properly or is sniffed out by the other team than calling a play that makes no total sense from the beginning.
Well, I was not impressed with the Baltimore play callers either. I mean, this is 3 weeks in a row. Jeep Christ and the former Pitt guy, Cignetti, and now Tressman's in there, and they're sneaking Flacco on the fourth and one, and they had three plays where they didn't use Forsett. They had this Allen out there. They ran it, you know, it's second and two. They run Allen twice and then Flacco.
The stat of the game was how the two teams did on third and fourth down. They were a combined 9 of 36 on third and fourth down. 9 of 36 in this era of easily converting the football and staying on the field on third downs between these two. 9 of 36.
More frustrating, this game for Steelers fans or Monday night for Bucco fans? These are two brutal losses this week. I mean, they're
Sid
both
not,
bad.
Sid not playing in Johnstown.
That's why he won Jag Off of the Week for the Pens organization.
I think when you look at some of the certainly this is early in the football season, and it may or may not have much to do with their positioning for the playoffs at the end of the year. The Pirates are so close, and it could have kept them alive for the division title at least a couple more days. And the fact that, as I said, there were some historic numbers in there, some things that Clint Hurdle talked about he had never seen in 41 years in the game as a player, coach, and manager, like 190 pitches, 10 walks, no runs, all the stuff, you know. Taking out a guy within pitching a shutout in the sixth inning at 50-some pitches because they were so desperate for a run. Mm. I think that was a little more historically weird than
I do
than
think
last
this is going to come back to haunt them, though.
Oh, I do, too.
Ben is out 6 weeks, and even if you go 2-4 and you get the divisional wins on the wraparound with the other teams in between, I'll take it.
Speaking of the Pirates, Tim, I know there was a Trib headline that caught your eye today. So we gear up for next Wednesday's wild card game now.
Did you see this? Bill's story today, Bill West. No Kutch crutch. Pirates standout center fielder no longer needs to carry team. Carry? How about one good game?
How about an RBI?
Where the hell has he been since Jung Ho Gung got hurt? What was it 231? Isn't that the number I gave you yesterday? 231.
September 6th.
And I don't think he's had a multi-hit game since Jung Ho Gung has left the lineup. And we're worried about him carrying the team. You talk about preemptive excuse making.
Yeah, this came from, I guess he talked to McCutcheon, and in the piece, right, he's quoting him about, you know, putting the team on my back. That was never the case. We have a better team. I don't need to do that. So I think the headline came less from Bill and his opinion on this, but McCutcheon saying, I don't need to win games by myself anymore.
It's not about Bill's column per se. It's just that maybe it is just the headline, but the sense, the vibe of, well, the pressure's off of McCutcheon. No, McCutcheon needs to step up. McCutcheon needs to start doing something. I mean, again, the tagline on the bottom of the front page even, supporting cast takes pressure off Kutch. Well,
although
thank God.
They did win 8 straight road games with him doing very little other than walking. So
I mean, it's true, but this suggestion of, oh, my God, he's so burdened and others are finally stepping up and taking pressure off him. What's he done for a month?
Yeah, that's not true either. By our emailers and by the sense I get, people are going to be expecting him to deliver in the postseason, right? That's not just a Barry Bonds thing, or you expect your stars to be big in the big games next week, no matter how good he's been. And like Hurdle said in here, in the past, if McCutcheon wasn't one of the main catalysts in what was going on, there probably wouldn't be a win to follow. So it's more talking about the team saying we're better than just one guy right now. But I agree that the headline is pretty alarming. Or eye-opening, whatever you want to say. Jim emails the program. He says, 4th-and-1, guys, I take my chances with Lev Bell. Between Vic, Scobie, and Le'Veon, if I had to bet my life on it, give me Bell. I emailed yesterday, Tomlin's staff is going to be front and center in this game, and they sure were. It was actually 4th-and-2, Jim, not 4th-and-1, but I get your point. Actually, no, it was 4th-and-1. The second one was 4th-and-1.
Well,
right.
As we always talk, Tim made an excellent point that I didn't think about how his work in his 5 weeks with the team or whatever it is, he does work with the secondary group of receivers more. Because in a game like this where your most important player is hurt, don't you want to go with your best options on every play? Where was Heath Miller? Antonio Brown wasn't as involved as much as he probably should have been. You don't let Le'Veon Bell touch the ball in the two biggest plays of overtime.
It's almost like they outthought themselves. Well, they're going to expect us to do this, so let's throw to Sammy Coates. I don't get it.
Hey, they did throw to Brown, though. I mean, on the second one.
How many
the
times
one
was
talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, how many times was he? He was targeted 9 times, I guess. So like, he did look for him, but.
Has anybody checked on D'Angelo Williams today? I mean, is he cramping? Yeah. Is he exhausted after doubling his workload from last week?
Can he kick?
Can he kick?
Yeah, double his workload, that's a big deal, Ken. I mean, you go from one carry a week ago to just a couple days later on a short work week getting up to 3. I mean, this guy's going to be gassed.
Well, the second carry he had, he lost 8 yards or something, so it wasn't instilling much confidence there in me. Mike W. says, the defense did enough to win this game, guys. The offense and play calling is to blame. No problem with them not giving Scobie a chance in overtime, but how do you not win when Steve Smith didn't play for half the game? Steelers won't win the division because they still have decent teams to play in the next 4 weeks.
I'll go back to what I said earlier about the defense. They made a lot of big plays. They were big in the red zone. They were big on third and fourth downs. They were good at the right times. Then there were other times where it's like Justin Forsett could have run into the river if he wanted to. You know what I'm saying? There's no resistance whatsoever to speak of from those guys.
Yeah. Ryan says, Ken, you're right. That's the worst decision of the game. The run by Bell with 1:45 to go. Cody Wallace at the point of the attack. Weak and cowardly. That was a loser's mentality. You play for the V formation there. Flacco was awful, by the way. That's the weakest Baltimore team they've had since Flacco was drafted.
That might
Ryan's
be right.
Opinion.
I think that's fair.
Hey, at 2-2, they're not done. I mean, I don't think we can sit here and say the Steelers can't win this division.
Granted, it's not, at 2-2. No, they're not done.
This is where we all thought they would be, right before the season began. They look like a 2-2 start.
Right, 2-2 itself is not. But they won the wrong games. They won the NFC games and not the AFC games. So there's that. And
like the Pirates and Penguins, they don't win in the division.
We weren't staring at coming out of 2-2 with Michael Vick playing the next couple weeks.
Right.
Maybe not. Maybe Bett will be back. Maybe Anthony Becht was onto something. He was back in 2 weeks.
Well, can we play the Jerome Bettis clip in the next hour where he begs Ben to not rush back? That was pretty revealing, I thought. That was some good stuff from Jerome.
Yeah, I enjoyed that press conference. I like listening to him talk. You know, did you get in there early? Did you see his interaction with those kids that were in there too? Whatever.
That was strange. Were we supposed to be filming that?
No, I don't think so. They were in there earlier for
Boys and Girls Club. Is that what it was?
I mean, I admire the guy. I mean, I've seen athletes before at a formal press gathering or at a formal function, and they put on the smile. Like the minute the lights are off, they're like out the door or getting a drink or doing something. He talked with those boys for 20 minutes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was bizarre because they brought him into the press conference room, and that's where the press conference with Bettis was supposed to take place, but they also had the meet and greet with the kids, and we were all in there, and there wasn't any filming of it going on. I was like, is this supposed to be like a feel-good, let's put it on TV, Jerome's meeting with the kids, and everybody's just kind of waiting, and he was whispering to the kids, I felt like we shouldn't be there, or were they double booked in a room or something? Was Thomas Tall hanging out with Joe Mangelino or whatever the hell his name is? Was there some glad handing going on? There's double bookings they had to use where the media scribes were for the poor kids.
Who is this Joe Manganiello guy?
I
know him?
Yes, he's married to Sofia Vergara. He's an actor.
Ah, okay.
He's a hunky stud, Ken.
All right. What's he in?
I don't know. What
hunky
HUNKY? True Blood. He's from True Blood.
Okay. I see him everywhere.
Oh, he's a Pittsburgh guy. Yeah. Right. Alderdice? Is that where he went? Oh, Mount Lebanon. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Mount Lebanon.
All right. One more email. We'll bring Rossi in. Troy emails from Florida. I agree with what most of you guys have said. I'm willing to cut Vic some slack, though. I think what he did as a backup is what you're supposed to do, give your team a chance. The coaching staff let the team down. If you're going to go for it on fourth down, you've got to take that into account on third down. The whole game, they took the ball out of Vic's hands, and then in overtime, they put it in his hands, and we know passing accuracy has never been his strong suit. Not sure that last selection was the best play call. That's probably true, too, although, I don't know, what's the degree of difficulty on that Vic throw? He said that was going to haunt him for a long time after the game yesterday.
He made it look a lot more difficult than it needed to be because, like I said, he didn't have to hit him in stride. He didn't have to hit him in the hands. He could have underthrown him, and Brown had position where he could have just fallen towards the ball and still gotten the first down.
They also ran like an 8-yard route there or something. It was way beyond the sticks. Did they need to go that deep? I mean, maybe they did for like confusion purposes, but
that 2-point play to Heath Miller from not 2 yards but 1 yard would have worked out quite nicely there, would it not have?
Hey, if they would have went for two, they would have won the game in regulation.
I know, if they had gotten it.
Right.